This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision.
Today, we're speaking with James Larson, Deputy General Counsel of IP at Purple. Hey, James, thanks so much for joining us. It's fantastic to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So your background in safeguarding intellectual property rights is pretty extensive. Can you briefly outline your journey from prosecuting international patents and trademarks all the way through becoming the Deputy General Counsel of IP at Purple?
Yeah, you bet. I've been a patent attorney for over 15 years now, which may date me a little bit, but I worked in many different areas of the law. Well, I should say in patents. I've worked with Fortune 500 companies. I've worked with small startups and worked in patent and both soft and hard IP over the course of this 15 years. And I started in different areas of it, but the last few years before I joined Purple, I was drafting and prosecuting patents worldwide, primarily domestically in the U.S., but of course, working internationally with a lot of foreign counsel. I joined Purple roughly 5 years ago. They, believe it or not, they headhunted me away from the law firm that I worked at, and I've been with them ever since. And most of my work has been, again, in managing the intellectual property portfolio of Purple. And that's kind of where I transitioned from an outside counsel type role to an in-house job.
Gotcha. So, as I've spoken to people in this industry, I have found that one of the common things is that they tend to be really extremely passionate about the work that they do. So I'm really kind of curious to understand what drives you. So what motivates and excites you the most about the work that you do in this complex field?
Well, first of all, I love to sleep. And if you know anything about Purple, we make mattresses. And so I'm passionate about sleep. I wish I could say that's the whole case, but it's not. One of the things that I really like about IP in general is I do get to work on things that people have never seen before. It's really an area of the law where you're like, oh, well, you don't really see anything new. Well, you do, especially if you're working on patents. You get to see new things all the time. So that's probably what drives me a little bit. But another part is there's these challenges with intellectual property where you also get the opportunity to do something that may not have been done before or may have been done before, but is a huge challenge and difficult to overcome. And being able to do that on a daily basis, maybe not daily, sometimes you have to do the Monday, but on a weekly, monthly basis to do the actual fun, that's the driver, is seeing what's new, what's different, what's that challenge that you're like, you know, I've only seen this in the industry a handful of times. Can I do that? And being able to accomplish something like that is exciting.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Now, reading into your background, as I was doing some prep work for this episode, I learned that you're also very passionate about skiing. So let's sort of do a mashup here. If you had to describe the current state of IP protection using a skiing analogy, what would that be?
I think for me, first of all, skiing is a huge passion of mine. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah. And let's see, I think I'm an hour away from 12 resorts. So it's fantastic. So if I have to think about IP in terms of skiing, first of all, the IP landscape is constantly changing. And if you ski the same mountain over and over again, you're going to see the same terrain over and over again. And some people like that. And if that's your vibe, great. Mine is I like to switch it up. I like to see different things. So I don't ski just a single mountain. Like I said, I've got 12 resorts close. There's backcountry skiing and there's everything else. And so you have the opportunity to ski different terrain to get better at what you're doing by actually switching it up. Secondly, is on a ski resort, there's different terrain, such as a green, a blue, a black. And sometimes at IP, you have to adapt where, you know, sometimes you want to move fast and you might want to take the quicker way down. And that might be a little more difficult and you might go a lot faster, but that's what you need at the time. Whereas other times you want to slow walk things. So you'll take the green run and you'll take it leisurely and you'll slow walk it. And that's how you can adapt to IP, is you need to be able to adapt to the situation that you're faced with. And if I were to correlate that with kind of what I do in my work, is I don't focus solely on patents. You know, there's soft IP, there's hard IP. I focus on patents, trademarks, copyrights, and what fits me in the moment. And I guess you could say that's kind of how you can ski, is how do you adapt to the moment?
Great analogy. Very vivid picture. Love it. Let's play a different game. Let's call it Predict the Challenge. So thinking about the next decade, can you name three upcoming challenges in the world of IP protection and maybe how they might play out given the acceleration of technology today?
So I think the hot button topic right now is probably ChatGPT,
right,
AI. And I don't know that there's a middle of the road. People are passionate on one side or the other. I think ChatGPT, first of all, may produce challenges, but I also think it produces opportunity. I've spoken with a lot of patent practitioners who have leaned into it and actually are using it. And I think that's smart. I think that's wise. And then I see some that are nervous that it might take their job. And I'm like, you know, I've talked with software engineers who I've worked with extensively that say, look, you have to adapt to what's going on. You know, 30 years ago, a software engineer had to write everything from scratch. Now they copy everything over and then they write a little bit of code and there you go. ChatGPT, I think, is one of those challenges that we need to either face head on and say, look, this can actually be a tool or it can actually hinder you. But I personally, if I'm going to give my own, I think we need to lean in. It's like, I think it provides us an opportunity, a challenge, but an opportunity.
Absolutely.
I think another issue that I see is saturation. One of the common jokes among practitioners is we reinvent something every 30 years. I see saturation as an issue of, you know, is the innovation going to stop or is it, again, just going to level up? And I think one of the challenges is, and I'll speak very much in the mattress industry space, is where is the opportunity to level up again? And Purple came on the scene and brought something different. We've seen the Tempur-Pedic and the Sealy's and the Serta Simmons, and it's kind of the standard. And, you know, when Tempur came into the market, they had this new memory foam and it was new and innovative. And now it's kind of, it's been around. It's been there for a few decades. Well, here comes Purple. And now we've got this gel grid. It's different. It feels different. And we try to upset the industry. And so to think that, you know, saturation, I think, could be a challenge. I think there's a chance that it's like, you know, it'll always evolve. Something new is going to happen.
That one brings to mind something else, though, right? Because if we're talking about that, in truth, innovation is at the heart and at the core of business growth, right? But you still have to have IP protection, right? So how do you balance IP protection without the potential of stifling innovation and creativity?
So I think that's a great question is, am I trying to stifle innovation in the organization that I'm in, or am I trying to foster that? Or am I trying to stifle competition outside the organization and innovation in turn? And so one of the things that I think you'll find with most patent practitioners is we are pretty adamant, at least I am, that I don't think IP protection stifles innovation. I think it actually encourages it. The Constitution was the document that said, look, we're going to protect art and intellectual property. And I think what that does is it's like, look, I'm going to go out and I'm going to invest and I'm going to put a lot of heart, time, and energy into this invention, this work of art, this brand. And in return, the government's going to grant me a monopoly for a period of time or whatever. And I think at least most of the inventors I've worked with and most of the companies I've worked with is that's the motivation to say, look, I actually want to innovate, but I don't want to do it and have someone steal it and just not have to invest like I'm willing to invest. And so, you know, the challenge of trying to foster innovation, I think, in an organization is fairly easy. I think as a whole, the system works. I don't think it stifles much. I mean, I think there's someone might disagree with me and that's fine. But I just think in my line of work and what I've seen is it actually encourages it.
Yeah, it might help it flourish really, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Of course. Okay, so let me ask you this though. Switching gears a little bit, because you mentioned also you've had a lot of experience with startups and that kind of thing. So now let's assume that you're advising a young brand. How vital would you say a comprehensive IP protection strategy would be for them, especially within like the supply chain side of things?
So supply chain's an interesting animal, especially if you're in consumer goods. You are competing with international companies and sometimes a lot of countries who may not encourage or discourage IP infringement, I should say. And so that's a challenge. And we face that challenge every day. But for a young company, and I've worked with many, what I typically like to do, and usually money is an issue, and you have to say, okay, how are we going to protect the best given your financial constraints? And so you want to look at it as, what's the best protection that they're looking for? Is a patent make more sense? Does a copyright make more sense? Does a trademark? Or should we keep it as a trade secret, which might be financially the best option, but may not provide you the best protection? I think as a young company, I'm always looking at, what are their needs? Is this a company that truly has, if they're looking for innovative or an invention type of device protection, or are they looking for brand protection? Mm-hmm. If they've got a really great name and, you know, 40 people are going to want to take that name and use it, well, now let's worry about a logo and a trademark. Is what they're doing artistic? Are they creating content? And maybe we look at more copyright protection. And so I have to analyze what are their needs. And then some, in obviously not just some, but I'm saying many instances, it involves all three or four. We're bringing trade secret into the mix. Is you have to actually consider all facets of IP, not just hard IP, not just soft IP. You've got to actually marry them together. But really, it comes down to, what does that individual company need?
Right. It makes sense that it would be, yeah, very unique to their particular business challenge, I guess, necessity. Are there any common mistakes that you see these types of companies, these smaller companies make, or any missteps that you think could be avoided?
I do think there are a number. And sometimes, again, it's just not knowing what's the best protection for what they're trying to protect. But secondly, I think sometimes when you don't understand where your business is, and we brought up supply chain, a lot of people source from Mexico or from China, and even some in Ukraine and Poland and things like that, where you're sourcing, you need to understand, where does that IP protection need to land? For instance, if I have a company that's doing all their manufacturing out of Vietnam, but their primary buyers are in the US and Canada, does it make sense that I need to file patent protection or even brand protection in the EU or in China? Or can I focus on, you know what, I'm going to focus on my manufacturing patents in Vietnam. I'm going to focus my product innovation, maybe also in Vietnam, but also in the US and Canada, where it's primarily going to be sold. So oftentimes I see individuals who are like, well, I just need to protect this everywhere. And it's like, well, slow down. Let's protect it where you need it. Understanding that, you know, trademarks and copyrights can always be filed later without losing rights. Patents don't afford you that same opportunity. So you may have to be a little more aggressive with a patent up front and say, you know, I don't know if I'm going to sell this in Taiwan or Japan, but I think I might. So maybe I do have to make those expenditures. And so it's again, analyzing the company, what are their needs? But I also think one of the common pitfalls is too often they put their eggs in one basket. It's, oh, I got to get patents. I need patents. And it's very often that, you know, a company's value is often their IP portfolio. And that, you know, if you don't have a really well-known brand, it's usually that falls in the patent world, in the patent realm. And so I always caution them. It's like, it's not just your patents. There's other things that you can protect. I mean, I can protect your software with a copyright or a trade secret. I don't need to use a patent. And it's trying to make sure that you're using the whole of IP protection and not just focusing on one.
Right. All the tools in the toolbox. So as we look into the horizon, how do you see the future of IP protection unfolding?
I think IP, there's so many trains of thought. Again, do I need it? Do I want to just share it and let there be competition? I think IP is a slow evolver. One of the interesting things, and we talked about some IP challenges, and one of the things that came to mind is, you know, in the 80s, the new invention of the VCR came out. And I'm just dating myself again.
Oh, I remember. The beta VHS roars.
Oh, of course. But it's like, when you think about, the VCR came out, and that was a huge copyright issue. It's like, oh my gosh, Sony's like, you can't do this. You're copying our content. Well, years later, there's the DVD burner, and then Napster. And now it's like, we have ChatGPT. We have all these other avenues. It's like, look, it's going to constantly evolve. So the way I see IP is, it has to evolve with it. Now, technology is always way ahead of the law. It just is. Law is slow. But what's really funny is, even though technology continues to advance, everyone seems to still come back to, oh, I need a patent. I need brand protection. I need to have my copyright. And so I think there will always be a need for those things. I just think we're going to see the law catch up to the technology. And it's going to be like, okay, so yes, like for now, they're saying, look, you can't copyright something ChatGPT created. It's like, look, it has to be an author. And you know, AI is not an author. And so there's going to have to be, again, some changes, but the law is going to be behind. Technology is always going to be ahead.
Right.
And that's kind of how I'm like, there's always going to be a need for it. It will always be there. And there's always going to be disputes, which always comes back to be like, oh, what's the law thing? And it's like, oh, well, technology is so far ahead, but we have to adapt. But IP is always going to be there.
Thank God for that. But it does seem like it's definitely a future full of like opportunities and challenges ahead for sure. Before we wrap up, James, could you offer our listeners three pieces of advice for a robust IP protection strategy?
I think I'm not as valuable as maybe my listeners might think I am. I'm not.
But don't sell yourself short. 15 years of lots of experience, I'm sure.
I've been doing this a while. I think one of the first things I can think about is, first of all, technology is going to move faster than we are. And I think we should lean into that. Now, I'm not here saying, you know, if I'm speaking very honestly, I've looked at ChatGPT and say, hey, could you write a patent for me? And ChatGPT didn't do too bad. And that might terrify some people. I'm not saying I would have turned that patent in. No way. But it provided an opportunity to maybe cut down on my time, give me opportunity to work on more projects. And I'm like, you know what? This is a good tool. So I think leaning into technology is important. And ChatGPT is just an example. I think you need to also take the opportunity to learn from your competitors. One of the constant problems we have is we're fighting with our competitors. And it's like, sometimes your competitors have a good strategy, or sometimes they've got a good technology that you can even build on and maybe even collaborate. Competition is good. And take that chance to learn from your competitor. And I think for IP practitioners, that's true as well, is what can an IP practitioner who may be competing with me, what can he learn? Then finally, use all avenues of IP. Don't focus on just a single one. One of the interesting things when I came into Purple is their trademark portfolio was fairly slim. Their patent portfolio was pretty robust, and their copyright portfolio was non-existent. And I think I can say with a very good degree of certainty that we've changed that dramatically. We've taken on the ability to say, look, we're now a brand. We need to expand the brand. And so we need more trademark protection. We create a lot of content. If you've seen any of our videos, some of them are quite humorous. Some are terrible. But we need to protect those as well, as we saw people copying those. And then, you know, maintaining a patent portfolio. But then in addition, trade secrets. I think we have a robust trade secret vault that we keep things in, and you need to use all facets of IP. Don't sell yourself short, and use, like you said, you need all the tools in the toolbox, because if I were to provide an example, we were struggling to get a patent on a specific pillow that we were trying to patent. So I tried to file it as a copyright in the U.S. Copyright Office as a sculpture, and it was rejected. So what I did is I took that same copyright and I filed it in China, and China allowed it as a copyrighted sculpture. And it's a pillow. Now, what does that copyright afford me? Well, the funny thing is now the U.S. has to enforce that copyright that I got in China.
That's awesome.
But I can use that copyright also to give to the Chinese import and export controls, to the U.S. import and export controls, and say, look, I have this copyrighted sculpture. It's a pillow, but I'm able to utilize that piece of IP to enforce something that I couldn't get with a patent. And so
what a creative approach.
And there's ways to constantly think about things in a different avenue. It's like, oh, I could get it this way. Is there a way I can protect it in another way? And what's interesting is that copyright is now valid for 90 years versus patent, which is only 20. So you have to think about what are the different avenues? How can I be creative in my own little purview of work? That, again, I don't like to look at myself as a creative individual. I take the creativity of others and then I protect it. But in a sense, I'm like, oh, I got creative here. I'm actually innovative.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to your point before, you said you don't put your eggs all in one basket. I mean, you very much diversified those baskets.
Yep. And you have to be willing to leverage IP in other jurisdictions that actually have to be, that are required enforcement in your jurisdiction. And copyright's one of those. It's an interesting thing. And it's an interesting animal. Most patent attorneys don't like to work in the soft IP. I love and thrive in the soft IP because I think there's opportunity.
Wow. Well, those are very wise words to end on there. Thank you so much for joining us today, James. It's really been delightful and enlightening. I'm sure that our listeners have been inspired to think about things and different approaches to their IP strategies here. If they have any questions or would like to learn more, where can they get in touch or maybe even learn more about Purple?
Well, purple.com. We actually own a color domain. So there's where you can find out so much about Purple and kind of our mattresses and our innovations. Secondly, if you want to reach out to me directly, I'm more than happy to entertain anything. And my personal email is simple. It's just james.l@purple.com. And they can reach out to me at any time.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for your time here. It was a very interesting conversation. I really enjoyed it. Let's keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.